F1 peoples, and welcome back to the Grand Prix Girls podcast. If you're a returning listener, thank you for tuning back in. If you're a new listener, buckle your seatbelts and enjoy. We have an action-packed episode for you this week because round two of the 2024 F1 season has come and gone. We will be talking about anything and everything that has occurred over the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix race weekend. Stay tuned. Okay. Our first topic we're going to be covering about the race weekend was the free practices. So, FP1, what are your guys' thoughts on what we saw? Why are you laughing?
I'm not laughing. I just...
Oh, I just saw.
I don't... This is going to be a chessy thing because I am so confused from this still about what has happened.
Well...
I'm very confused.
Charles Leclerc was on a side quest to collect as many plastic bags as he possibly could throughout FP1, which I suppose is better than Ferrari collecting drain covers. He referred to the track as being like Mario Kart with all of the plastic bags that are on there.
Live action Mario Kart happening.
Yeah, basically. Though I would like
something
to
I would
clarify,
love to see, but
yeah,
not
do the plastic bags act more like a blue shell, a red shell, a green shell? Like, I feel I need this answer.
Yeah. Where is the mod, the plastic bag mod that's coming?
Yes.
I'm sure someone's on it.
I hope so.
I feel like I picked a really terrible week to go out of town.
You did.
Because I woke up and I saw plastic bags and I was... This was my face.
What? You don't expect plastic bags to kind of be... the star of the show of FP1.
No, I expect drain covers now, right? Like, expected, normal, makes sense.
I mean, if drain covers are what you're expecting, then FP2 more than had you covered.
That is true. I woke up and I was
like,
good old drain covers. They got they got us back.
They made
you can always count on them.
They had their moment.
Thankfully, it wasn't destroying a car. It was just delaying the start of FP2. Supposedly for a loose bolt on a drain cover in the pit lane. But it was interesting because when they showed the coverage of the pit lane, no one was anywhere near a drain cover. So I was like, where is the drain cover that's causing the issue? Like, is this just an excuse to go and pick up all the plastic bags? Or is there really an issue? So there was a bit of confusion.
Do we know if there ever was an... Like, did we ever find that out? Or is it just the mysterious...
I mean,
mysterious...
not that I saw.
Okay. So
it's like, was someone messing... Was someone trying to trigger Fred Vasseur by just saying, there's a loose bolt and a drain cover in the pit lane?
Yep. The mystery of the Saudi Arabian drain cover.
Yeah.
Who knows?
And I mean, the Sainz was getting in the car with appendicitis. 39 degree fever.
Yeah.
FP2.
Maybe not so just that much was, stood, yeah.
That was incredibly dangerous, in my opinion. Like, I get high performance athletes in peak physical condition, but a 39 degree fever is a 39 degree fever. And I just don't believe that you are really cognitively as in control of the car as you should be if you're getting into it and driving at speed with 19 other drivers on the track.
Yes.
So I feel like that should have very much been a moment where the doctor steps in and says, I think not. I think you sit this out until your temperature calms down or we figure out what the problem is.
Yeah.
But nope, he went
out. They did figure out what the problem was.
Yes, they did. They removed the offending organ.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully. But, I mean, FP2 was just... Yeah. I mean, it was just a kind of a standard practice session, I think. Like, you had cars doing the race simulations and the quali simulations, and there was dust all over the track, so it was impacting on the performance of the cars, as it always does at Jeddah. But... I mean, there was the incident between Hamilton and Sargent.
Oh, yes, there was that. There was that.
Yeah. Which wasn't...
Poor Logan.
And it was interesting because this season, the FIA was confirming that the drivers on their dash, on the steering wheel, have, like, this tiny little piece of writing that... Well, it's not tiny, but for the camera, it's tiny, that alerts them to who the two drivers ahead of them on the track are and the two drivers behind mm-hmm. them. The problem for this was it was in a series of S's for Hamilton, and because Sainz was the car immediately coming up behind him, that was the focus, supposedly. So he was trying to slow down and move over to allow Sainz to go by, but it put him on a line that Logan needed to be on, and Logan had to take very quick evasive action to avoid a very nasty collision. Clear case of impeding. I mean, I get having that technology, and that's great, but somebody from the pit lane should have been saying to Hamilton, by the way, Sargent's on a fast lap coming up behind Sainz, so move over way further.
Yeah, didn't you think?
Which I guess, which is why Hamilton just got the reprimand and his team got fined for impeding. But
which
I mean,
makes sense.
Yeah.
Well just done to Sargent.
Yeah.
For avoiding that collision, because that would have been a 3-car pileup.
Thursday was just not a great day for Logan Sargent and almost crashing.
No, not really.
No.
It wasn't the greatest day. No. But, I mean, he didn't do badly in
not
the
worst.
So
he didn't crash. And it wasn't his fault, so.
Did not write off the car, that is true. Clipped a wall, but it was fine.
It's fine.
Stroll got a black and white flag because he crossed the line of the pit lane entry, which they all got warned about. And interestingly, in all the feeder formulas, all we heard about was the race director's note about not crossing that line when going into the pit or driving past the pit lane entry. And so when it came up, like, black and white flag for Stroll, I was like, if this is about the pit lane, I'm so sick of hearing about it. Like, guys. But yeah.
Come on.
So, FP2.
Pit lane is your plank check. Like, my plank my plank check is your pit lane.
Oh, no, the plank check for me is the plank check too, to be fair. But, and drain covers is drain covers and pit lane. I'm just, like, slowly racking up a list of things that are just so...
And track limits in
track limits.
Yeah.
Just Qatar.
Mm-hmm. Impeding in the pit lane.
Impeding, speeding in the pit lane. Just, okay, so I'm not really slowly racking up the list. It's getting there pretty fast. But then... FP3.
Bit of a change up in a lineup. Yeah.
Ollie Bearman, who we are all repping as much as we can today. Obviously, Sainz was ruled out with appendicitis, and Ollie Bearman, being the reserve driver Ferrari, stepped into the car. And I mean, youngest Ferrari driver in Formula One history, third youngest driver to compete in a Formula One race. And I think he did brilliantly. They had him out early on the mediums, and he topped the timesheets, like beating Russell, who was on softs, by the way, which is impressive. He didn't stay the top of the timesheets, but he did stay like within the top 10, which for your first performance in Formula One is incredibly impressive. I mean, he was never going to beat Perez and Verstappen because they're in Red Bulls. But to do what he did and putting in solid work, everyone was impressed with him. Like Charles Leclerc, Fred Vasseur were all singing his praises after FP3, and rightly so. There was an issue when Joe crashed, and it was a nasty crash for Joe Guan Yu. Clipped the wall and then spun into the barrier, and like the force of it triggered the G-force warning for the med car. So we saw a red flag so they could fix the barrier and check Joe out, but it was so late in the session, poor Sauber were on a race against the clock to fix that car for qualifying. A race against the clock. And it was not great.
No.
And Stroll had an issue impeding Gasly and said that he didn't get the message on the dash about Gasly being there. And so then the commentator was like, well, did Hamilton not get the message? It's like, Hamilton's situation's been dealt with.
Yep.
Like, this is a separate one, and maybe indicating that the system isn't working quite as well as it can. So they red flagged the session for Joe's crash, and when they resumed the session, the lights in the pit lane weren't working. So they had the little handheld paddle that has stop in green on one side, no, stop in red on one side and go in green on the other, And they were like holding out for the drivers who were queuing in the pit lane. I was like, low tech solution. Love it. Let's go. So it was a bit chaotic, really. And Sergeant clipped the wall, damaged the front suspension. So Williams had to try and get his car ready as well.
Yeah.
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 So a lot for Behrmann's first pre-practice session three in Formula One, because he'd only done FP1 sessions up till that point. You really chose the wrong week to go away.
I did.
I think that's your cue. I'll need to move us on to qualify.
All right, then. So next topic, we're going to talk about qualifying.
It's a great quality episode, guys.
I was almost just going to read exactly what you wrote, Chessie. The track temperature was 32 degrees.
Like, true commentary is like, it was Haas, the team who went out first, with Behrmann joining the track next ahead of the Mercedes.
Yes.
Which is just dramatic.
Behrmann went out on the soft tyres first.
I think this should stay in.
Sauber was working very hard to repair Zhou's car after the collision in FP3. But the car was not ready to go on track at the start of Q1.
Yes, that is very true.
It's very
true. The McLarens had slight issues. Their floor was touching the ground a lot, but they didn't adjust the ride height at all. Ain't that right, Chess?
Yeah, to be fair, the McLaren felt that like having the lower ride height might negate the delta issues they were having on the straights. But it did mean that every time they went onto the onboard camera for the car, all you heard was the floor scraping against the road. Yeah. Which I just kept thinking, how's the plank doing, lads? But yeah, it was fine, apparently, so far.
So far, yeah, so good.
Yeah, it was Behrmann's first qualifying in Formula One. And I think he did very well. His first flying lap put him in P10, which is pretty good for a rookie who had no idea that they were going to be in that car until that day and had only done FP3. Alonso and Stroll were doing really well at the start of Q1, I have to say. Like, the Aston Martin was showing serious pace. And then Piastri was outperforming Norris consistently throughout, which was interesting to see. Obviously, a lot of commentary about that's not surprising, he's got great quali pace, he lacks the race pace, but he was still consistently putting in solid times despite the fact that that car wasn't particularly suited to Jeddah.
Yeah, you could say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Russell, of course, had crossed the pit lane entry and was showing a black and white flag.
Nice little black and white flag.
Oh. Yep.
Shock.
Look at the hat.
Yep. Yeah. Stroll managed to have a lap time deleted for exceeding track limits, which I always find funny in Jeddah because the barriers are right there, but then I remember the little runoff areas they have. I'm like, okay, it was there. Yeah. It wasn't that he was like literally on the wall.
He's on the wall.
Yeah, like
they're like,
because like, oh, he's exceeding track limits. I'm like, did you tell us which turn? Because otherwise I'm just having a really weird imagination moment.
Like, one wheel's up, like, halfway on a wall.
Like, I mean, he's
driving along the side.
Like, fair play to Sauber.
He's pulling a Lightning McQueen.
He pulled a Lightning McQueen. They did get the car out with, like, a minute and a half left, but Joe couldn't get around the track quick enough to actually start a flying lap. So Sauber had worked so hard to get that car repaired and managed it, but he had to start from the back of the grid. But Ollie Behrmann made it to Q2. Ocon, Sargent, Joe, Bottas and Gasly did not.
No.
Which wasn't looking great for the Alpines, to be fair. At all.
No.
No, it was not.
No.
Yeah.
You really don't want both of your cars out in Q1.
No.
Not ideal.
I mean, no, you that is exactly true, yes. Thank you, Will Butts.
Yeah, I'm Will Butts. Again, Haas got both cars into Q2. So, that was impressive for Haas. They were doing well.
It was.
Of course, it didn't last particularly long. Magnussen was trying to give Hülkenberg a toe and a slingshot going around on, like, the prep lap so that Hülkenberg would get the slingshot going into the start of his fast lap, and that worked until Hülkenberg's car stopped. And obviously we then had the session paused with 11 minutes remaining to remove the car.
Yeah.
But that did give Bernie Collins plenty of time to drop very important knowledge that it turns out 10 minutes 58 seconds is enough time technically for the teams to do two runs. Like, the teams can send the driver out on a set of scrub tires, come in for a full turnaround, so change the tires and the fuel load, and then head back out. Of course, traffic can impact whether that's successful or not, but it was interesting to know that that is possible with that amount of time in Jeddah. And then, yeah, Behrmann narrowly missed out on Q3 by 0.036 seconds. He was so close to Lewis Hamilton. But, I mean, his time kind of, it was impacted by all of the traffic and the temperature, like, came out of the tires, and then he had a moment where he went over the curb and clicked the wall, which hurt his lap, so understandable, and still a great performance from a rookie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, no, 100% still a great performance. I kind of just wanted him to get to Q3.
I know, but he went out with Albon, Magnussen, Ricciardo, and Hülkenberg, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to lose out on Q3 to a 7-time world champion, I think there are worse ways to lose out on Q3.
Yeah.
As a rookie. Yeah. So.
Oh, for sure. For sure. You make your qualifying debut, there's many worse ways for that to go.
Yeah. There could have been a drink over issue. Yeah.
I loved watching that when it was Hülkenberg out, and then it was towards the end of Q2, and it just cuts to him, and he's just like
chilling on the side,
just on a chair, just literally just vibing, like,
yeah. He was like, "I'm out for this, but I'm here for the rest of it." Like, he was just watching. Yeah. He was having a great time.
He was.
Like, at least I get a nice seat. Nice.
He got front row seats for the rest of qualifying. A chair and a bottle of water. So he was living his best out of quality life.
Yeah.
I'm
here for it.
But yeah, then like in Q3, only a few of the drivers had new sets of tyres for that session. Others hadn't managed that. Like, Lando Norris only had one set of new tyres. And I was sat there like, if Sarah were watching this, she'd be typing furiously in Discord or on WhatsApp, be like, what the ever living fuck is going on in
when
the
I
right now?
When I saw that after the fact, also my phone was like dying and I needed it alive for the airport, so there was a limit to how much I could type. When I saw that, you are exactly right, I was so mad. I was so annoyed. Because for anyone that doesn't know, the McLaren tire strategies in qualifying really grind my gears.
To be fair, only in the end stages of the second half of the season last season they did this.
Right. Yes.
It was for a few races. They decided to save a new compound and not bother with qualifying.
Now, however, they need to write all that to get back in my good books for a bit, because that amount of, even though it wasn't the whole season, it wasn't like they always do this, it's annoyed me to the nth degree. And so seeing this, those tire numbers.
We did have a good moment. Yeah. Like, even though the toe kind of failed for Hülkenberg in that his car stopped, Alonso had been going quite slowly, come around the final corners and like slipped in behind Hamilton to get the toe from him going down the start finish straight before starting his final lap. So I was like, all right, Alonso, fair play. Like, you know, go ahead. Yeah. And he did. He got a good lap out of it. Yuki Tsunoda managed to out-qualify Danny Ricciardo for the second race of the season. But I don't think anyone was shocked when Max Verstappen got pole.
No.
What do you mean?
Yeah. He did.
He got pole position. I know. Started at the front with 19 cars behind him, which is the goal of any driver. And Leclerc came in P2 and Perez P3. So yeah, that's Holly and my Will Buxton impression. That's not actually my Will Buxton impression. I'll save that for another time.
Can you do it now?
No.
Please? Or is this, please? Do we have to wait? Is this like a milestone thing? We get your Will Buxton impression?
Yeah. If we get a certain number of subscribers, I'll actually do a Will Buxton impression. But not today.
You heard it here.
Subscribe.
You heard it here, here.
Do it now.
No, you heard it here first, folks.
Do it.
Do it. You heard it here. The race.
The race.
Yes.
Yes.
That I was 3 laps behind on. That was great. Great fun. Thank you, Wi-Fi issues. I was just a bit delayed.
We saw, only 2 teams really properly split their strategies, which was interesting to see. Valtteri Bottas and Behrmann both started on a new set of softs, whereas everyone else started on the mediums. And I get, Ferrari's whole point was, this is going to give Behrmann, the best grip to start with, and he's starting in P11, so this should allow him to make up positions quickly. But the flip side when you start on the new softs is that they degrade so much faster with the heavy fuel load. And with everyone else on the mediums, you never really know. But
yeah,
he had a good start. Perez had a better start.
He did.
Got past Leclerc. And to be fair, it's not like the Monegasque let that stick. He took the place back, and he is fighting against the Red Bull. So it was somewhat of an inevitability. He wasn't going to hold on to P2.
Someone
still fought for it.
Had a not a terrible start, but a little jumping situation occurred. Potentially.
Well, as Russell reported.
Yes. Jump start.
According to George Russell, jump start.
Yes. Now, Russell this on the radio is not always the most. You take it with a pinch of salt, but.
As you do with most of the driver radios, we'll be fair.
Yeah.
They're all trying to get whatever they can in that moment. And I can't help with it. It was particularly funny, though, because in the press conferences following qualifying, Alonso had been playing around with Lando Norris, being like, oh, you're never going to overtake us on the straight. And when Norris was asked how he could fight that, Norris joked, well, I could always jump start. So I think when it came up, jump start Norris, I was like, he did not actually do it.
I think he took the joke a little too far.
Yeah, but thankfully they investigated.
A little too seriously.
Yeah, they investigated and there was no jump start.
Yeah, according to their sensors.
Yeah.
In the car.
But it still made for an entertaining first few laps. As if the action on the track wasn't entertaining enough with Gasly having to retire with gearbox problems.
Yes.
Norris and Tsunoda were investigated for unsafe release in the pit lane heading towards the grid for the formation lap.
Yep.
Oscar Piastri did a phenomenal overtake on Alonso, despite lacking the straight line speed that the Aston Martin had.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Verstappen was out of DRS by lap 2, shocking absolutely no one.
Yep.
There was a lot going on in the first few laps.
There was.
Yeah.
And it was about 15 laps of us going, is he going to be investigated? Is there going to be a penalty?
What's going on?
It seems like we've been waiting for a while now.
Yeah. Although, speaking of penalties, there were plenty for Kevin Magnussen, who managed to get 2 10-second penalties.
Yeah.
One for the unsafe release in the pit lane, and the other for leaving the track and gaining an advantage?
Causing
a collision causing with Albon, and then leaving the track and gaining advantage against Tsunoda.
Yeah. Yeah. And the causing the collision makes 100% sense for the 10-second.
Mm-hmm.
The leaving the track probably could have been a 5.
No, they've made it 10-second, though. That was the rule since last season. They changed it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because it wasn't enough. Because the 5-second penalty, as we saw in Las Vegas,
which,
when you have the 5-second, they can just drive up ahead the road and then get a 5-second penalty, and it's fine.
Right.
A 10-second penalty, if you're not in a Red
Bull. Yeah.
has a substantial impact.
That's true. If you're not in your Red Bull, and he won't do it again.
If you're in a Red Bull,
yeah,
it's not really going to do
it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then yeah, Perez got a penalty. That was for an unsafe release in the pit lane. Which did nothing come the end of the race because he was already 12 seconds ahead of Leclerc anyway.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Lap we 7. We saw like.
Yeah.
We had Stroll clipping
the wall
in turn 22 and then he goes into the wall and they
binned it.
Yeah.
Opposite side of the track. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Bringing out the yellow
flag. And then we got the. Yes, we got
very
the, can you bring it back? Can we bring it back? I'm in the fucking wall.
No, I hit the wall. I get, you're frustrated, you've hit the wall, you're out of the race, you know. But your race engineer is asking a perfectly valid question, can you bring the car back? Yep. There is no need to be snippy with them. Just be like, nah, sorry, it's done.
I do wonder in that moment though, were they just looking at data and saw he stopped and didn't see quite where he was stopped? I would be intrigued to know.
Yeah. Because surely with the damage that was done to the car, there should have been some data showing that this car
was not coming back.
Yeah.
I suppose though from their mind, as long as there are still four tires on the car, or at least three tires on the car, and the car hasn't come to a complete stop, in theory you could bring it back, so long as the suspension
might take
an hour or so, throttle, the brakes and the steering are working. But apparently
he
couldn't, so we saw the safety car come out, which, as we know in Jeddah, is the time where everyone is supposed to jump into the pit and take advantage of the effective free pit stop, and most cars did.
Or they did.
Most of them did.
Four didn't.
Hamilton, Hülkenberg, Joe, and Norris did not, and they elected to stay out, running long on the mediums, which is a bold move. Though I get it. You kind of hope that there may be a late safety car, and you could get the free pit stop later on, come out on a set of softs, and you've got massive advantage because you've got a lot of fuel load, and the amount of rubber down on the track. So it's a gamble.
Yep.
Hamilton did not seem happy with the gamble, though.
Yeah.
He was like...
And I don't think here it was necessarily the right gamble. I understand why you make the gamble with the way the race turned out. Clearly it wasn't the gamble to make.
No.
He just was the unlucky Mercedes then, that he got that strategy and Russell got the other one.
Yeah, they split the strategy, which, for him. I mean, that happens.
Yeah.
Most people pitted for the hard, which meant they had a long run on hards in Jeddah.
Yeah.
Long run. And there was a lot of, what if this person does pit and gets onto the softs with only 15, 16 laps to go?
Yeah.
Are they going to stay in the points? Yeah. Are they not? And we definitely saw that happening with Behrmann at P7 once Norris and Hamilton and Joe pitted, and then Norris and Hamilton battling it out for so many laps. And I mean, fair play to Lando Norris. You don't have the straight line speed that the Mercedes has, but
not at all.
He kept the position. So many attempts by Hamilton to overtake, and he couldn't get the move to stick. So Norris did a really good job, and it helped Ollie Behrmann out a lot. Who was only 3 seconds off the road.
And Piastri had a similar thing with Hamilton.
In the first stint of the race. He'd struggled to get past Hamilton. I mean, it's never going to be easy getting past Lewis Hamilton. He's phenomenal at defense. But Piastri really did give it a good go.
Oh, yeah. And you could see that DRS was just not helping the way we were expecting it to.
No. But, to be fair, Piastri did manage to stay out of the DRS of Fernando Alonso for a good while.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, yeah.
A good long while, which was impressive. I was just out there thinking, this car, everyone said that it can't handle, it doesn't have the straight line speed, and yet when it came to it, it was it's doing a good job managing the tyres. and keeping the pace. And then we had further back, like, the fight between Hülkenberg and Behrmann for a good couple of laps.
That was...
Yeah. Oh my gosh, yes.
Like, that was a good battle.
Behrmann would get past, and then Hülkenberg would do the switchback, and then they'd go around again, get to the DRS zone, Behrmann would get by, Hülkenberg would do the switchback, and it's like... And I think at one point, because our times weren't the same, you had Behrmann ahead and I had Hülkenberg ahead, and I was like, I don't know who's actually ahead in this race right now. Like, can the times please just sync? And I think Sky Sports had reported, like, did Hülkenberg get ahead? Is Hülkenberg behind? It's like, where are these two drivers on the track?
Like, No one knew.
Yeah, we are checking. But Magnussen with his 2 10-second penalties, I was losing my mind on our Discord call. You are so glad you were not there, Sarah, because I ended up putting, like, in block capitals in a document how angry I was at the situation. So,
yeah,
I understand.
Firsthand.
You have 20 seconds worth of penalties for one driver, right? He's not going to be in the points, okay? He's going to fall to the bottom of the timesheets. And so you decide to use him as a defense to get your other driver into the points. I understand that, okay? Believe me. And Magnussen did a phenomenal job of saving the energy of the car, going around coasting, and then using all of that energy in the defense against the DRS train behind him. However, could you not have also pitted Magnussen, served your 20 seconds, put him on a set of soft tires, and given him the opportunity to try to get into the points as well? Hülkenberg's a good enough driver that he could have stayed ahead of the cars behind him. Yes, Magnussen...
That would have been fascinating to watch.
Yeah, Magnussen did a phenomenal job. But Hülkenberg's a good enough driver that I think you could put your faith in him to be like, look, this is what we need you to do, Nico. You have got to stay P10. I need you to get P10 and stay P10. What we're going to do is we're going to pit Magnussen. He's going to serve his penalties. We're putting him on a set of softs. And we're hoping that with 15, 16 laps left, he can make up enough to hopefully get into your DRS. And if something happens ahead of you, potentially we get two people in the points. But not doing that, you guarantee one of your drivers cannot be in the points.
That would have been really just fascinating to watch.
That would have.
Right?
I guess they might have wanted to guarantee one, but that would have been really cool to watch.
But guaranteeing 1 point when you could battle for more. Like... I don't know. It just really bugged me. I was like, I get why you've done it, but there were other options, I'm just saying. I get you guys are way smarter than me in the analysis and the strategy and everything. I get you have the data that I don't, but come on.
Chase is like, I have an idea and I want you to use it.
Just give let Magnussen cook.
Let
K-Mag cook.
We did have some wonderful midfield battling overall.
We really did.
It was fun to watch when F1 TV was showing us that.
Consistent issue though with producers not showing what's actually going on in the midfield.
Yep.
But replaying the starting moment.
I feel like for a lot of the midfield battling, they did better than normal, but there was also,
I do think it helps when there's a rookie in the race.
Yes.
Who's only going to be there for one race. They're going to try and focus more on what's going on.
Yep.
And when you know that Red Bull are obviously going to take P1 and P2, barring any accidents. Like,
I think that's all why we also saw a lot of Ollie's dad. Bless him.
Bless him. He went through every emotion, that
he
man.
He did.
I think he went through the 7 stages of grief.
Yeah.
Like,
but Behrmann had a phenomenal race, and I think it was the easiest vote any of us ever had for driver of the day.
It was.
The percentage just kept growing every time it went on screen. I was like, yes.
He did brilliantly, and there was a reason Charles Leclerc was full of praise for him in his post-race interview.
Oh yeah.
Like.
As
I think what was said after qualifying was very interesting when Charles Leclerc was being asked about Ollie Behrmann, and he was saying, look, this is his first F1 race. This is so exciting for him. Mine, I had 2 months to prepare and I was in Sauber. He found out today he will be in FP3 and qualifying and therefore the race tomorrow. And he stepped up and he did a phenomenal job. And he really showed what talent he is. And I think he showed...
He did.
He took that opportunity and I think he showed Haas that he's ready for F1.
Oh, yeah.
I think he...
And now he's number 10 in the standings.
And he's number 10 in the standings with 6 points. And I know, like...
he is...
A lot of people were talking about...
He's going to be ahead of someone.
He's going to be ahead of someone, yeah. And a lot of people were saying, like, oh, it's going to be just like Nyck de Vries. Everyone's talking him up. But I think it's fundamentally different than de Vries.
Yeah.
Because Nyck de Vries had won F2 after a few seasons.
Yeah.
Went to Formula E, had a couple of seasons, won the Formula E championship, and then stepped into a Formula One car. Granted, similar circumstances of why getting it, like a driver having appendicitis. If I were the doctors, I would just be routinely checking everyone's appendix from now on. But
yeah.
That's just me. But Ollie Bearman has had one season in Formula 2. He's not won the Formula 2 championship. He's not won the Formula 3 championship. And he's stepping into a Ferrari. And the pressure of stepping into a Ferrari is significantly higher than stepping into what was a lower midfield team of the Williams that had been not performing that season. And so the hype around Ollie Bearman right now, I think, is justified far more than the hype around Nyck de Vries. Like, the expectation for Nyck de Vries to get into the points was just like, it's a Williams, it's unlikely, but it's Monza and their car suited for that. Whereas this is, you are getting into the legendary team.
Yeah. You have to.
This is your one shot challenge to really prove that you're ready and to prove in Scuderia Ferrari that you're ready.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I think he absolutely knocked it out of the park.
He did.
He did so
well. He will be in F1. It's just a matter of when will it be. Will it be next year?
I hope so. I really, for him, I hope so.
That would be amazing.
Like, I hope we don't have to wait as long as it was for Nyck de Vries.
No.
I would like not another 8 to 10 years, please.
Yeah, and I think if we could have Ollie Bearman and Liam Lawson in Formula One next year, we are going to have such a great season to watch. Like, I'm manifesting that with every 38 that I write on every
so good. Right now. The 2025 rookies, Liam Lawson,
Ollie
Bearman.
And please, potentially, if he gets enough super license points to Mercedes, give it to him, Kimi Antonelli.
Yes.
I would love that too.
Yes.
If he's 2026, that's fine. But yes.
So, no. I think Ollie Bearman deserves driver of the day, deserves an entire episode of praise, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
He did brilliantly. He does. And
as we are.
John Elkann showing up for the race was a really nice thing to do. Like, my Ferrari driver, academy driver, stepping into that car, I am being there for that race.
Who had the best overtake, do you want to say?
Piastri and Alonso.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Ollie had some very good ones, though.
He did. That's true.
Mine's a tie between both of those two. I don't know.
Can we give it to Ollie for sentiment?
Yeah.
This is the Ollie Bearman appreciation
hour. Yeah, because Ollie's the rookie.
It is.
And he had really good overtakes. Piastri's not
very
rookie.
Good overtakes.
Yep.
And Piastri had a great overtake on Alonso last week. So.
Yeah. So we'll probably see another great overtake on Alonso next week. So we're good.
I feel like Piastri's gonna
get
very much
crash next week, and that's going to
very much becoming a target for Alonso now. Like, there's not many times you can overtake the Minister of Defense and get away with it. Alonso's going to be like,
Alonso's like, we might be friends, but I'm going to...
Yeah, it's like, Piastri, I may have known you when you were an academy driver, but it's all. Like, let's...
This is like Alonso impression.
Yeah, I don't think he drives the car like this.
That's how Charles Leclerc drives the grandma.
Scooted forward.
Yep. Well, Fernando Alonso is a very short person.
Yeah, exactly.
He is, yeah. But you need to be, really. So, yeah. All right. Best overtake, Ollie Bearman, for any one of the overtakes he did.
Yep.
Because he did several on Hulkenberg at one point. So.
He did.
Biggest letdown. Is it Haas or is it Haas and Magnussen for those penalties, or is it Alpine for another lackluster week with that terrible car?
Well, and having gearbox issues in the formation lap, not even making it through one lap of the race.
But that
we
to
didn't
me,
give it to Alpine.
For one of them.
But for like one. To me, that's not a letdown because I expect it from Alpine.
It's oh, it was a, yeah.
Yeah.
I expected it. I did not, like, especially with all the turnover in the team that happened throughout the week.
It's true.
I feel that's like true. This, it's like, not a letdown because of how bad it was last week, but we didn't give it to them last week because there was a bigger letdown. So of the two races, they might combine to be...
Nah, to me it's Haas. Like, how do you allow Magnussen to get two 10-second penalties?
We'll give it to them.
Was performing very well in qualifying and stuff, so it was kind of expected he would do well, and then to come out and have
20 seconds
penalty
worth of penalties.
Yeah,
that's a record. It's probably not one you want at a race.
I don't think it even is a record, to be honest.
Well, it should be one.
It should. But, so, like, yeah,
you don't want it to be more than that.
You don't want it.
No, for me, it was
okay, we'll give it to Haas, but I think Alpine is just adding to their, they might be in the fight.
I just think Alpine is the season-long biggest letdown.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right.
But individual races.
Yep. They're going to consistently live up there until it's just... Oh, look at them doing shit again.
Yeah, let's hope that when they do bring the upgrades, it improves the cars. But I'm not holding much hope when it's massively overweight.
Imagine
that, on it.
Imagine if they're downgrades.
Oh, if they pull an Aston Martin 2023 and manage to make the car
worse.
And
get even worse. Yeah.
I hope then they really would be the biggest letdown, because how you become a bigger letdown than you already
how
are.
How can you get...
Let's not ask how you can get worse, because they'll then answer the question.
What I've said is either going to age very, very funny or shockingly accurate.
Yeah, but I think either way, it's still going to be funny, in a way.
Yeah, true.
Yeah,
true. Yep.
So, time and date. Alpine, potentially going to get worse.
Yep. That's my prediction.
Signed and sealed. Moving on.
Sealed, delivered, I'm yours.
Yep. So, yeah.
I think we covered everything for... Oh, no, we didn't do... Did we not do strategy? We kind of did, okay. We did, okay, so we'll just move on.
Yeah.
So, on to our next little topic session, our rumor mill.
It just keeps... getting worse.
Yes. Red Bull's power struggle happening, and Marco was reportedly suspended, but it was confirmed today that he had agreed to continue, and Verstappen has been defending him. So is Max Verstappen using his position as the golden goose to protect Marco, or is it kind of just a bluff situation?
I think it's both. Honestly, I think it's, I am your golden goose, and if I'm threatening to leave, there's no way you let him go. And I think it's, I don't think it's a risky move, because he's such a phenomenal driver, there is no way that the parent company would allow Verstappen to leave.
Yeah.
And I don't think if they had gotten rid of Marco, I don't believe that Verstappen would have left. Like, I don't believe for one moment there's not a non-compete in his contract, that he's allowed to just mid-season quit Red Bull and go and drive for another team. Because we see engineers and mechanics who leave teams and they have to go on gardening leave. because of the knowledge of the car that they have and the knowledge of the progression that they have, there is no way that Max Verstappen, who has all of the knowledge of the car and Adrian Newey, to go to another team. Not to mention, can any of the other teams afford to pay out their current driver and then pay Max Verstappen? So,
I don't know.
To me, I was just like, I get the power move. Like, I get saying it. You're trying to defend for Marco. And because you're so good, it's not really a risky move because they're never going to call you out on it. But they have to have known if they did call him on it. He wasn't. This is Max Verstappen, who lives to race. There is no, I did not believe for 1 minute that he would actually, if Marco was fired, that Max Verstappen would leave.
It seems a bit fishy.
Yeah, but clearly it worked.
I'm also just, at this point, with everything going on, with the, I feel like calling it the Christian Horner Red Bull fiasco is downplaying it, but I'm so lost keeping track of what's factually happened and what's not and the sources is getting increasingly more difficult, I would say.
I'm at the point, just fire the lot of them. Fuck it, just clean house.
Yeah.
This is just ridiculous. And I'm sorry, but when Jos Verstappen is trying to claim moral superiority in any situation, please can we review what's happening and just stop it all?
Right. Yeah. This is another situation where me being gone this week was every time I looked down at my phone, it was like a, wait a minute.
Who now?
Am I reading the name right?
You are.
Max Verstappen's father? Huh? And then it was like a, Daniel Ricciardo said what?
Yeah, Perez coming out in defense of Horner. Max Verstappen going on TV and being like, my dad doesn't lie.
Yeah. Who got suspended?
Marco gets suspended. This other person gets suspended. I was just like, get your goddamn house in order, Red Bull.
Yeah,
please.
Sit everyone down. If you need, like, mediation or couples therapy, I don't know, but fix it. Because I cannot imagine the stress of being a mechanic, an engineer, or a driver in this situation, and you've got Marco, Jos Verstappen, Christian Horner, basically just civil war with each other.
Every
interview question is going to be about it constantly, and then people are criticizing drivers for not having an answer that's appropriate. It's like, what do you want them to say when the situation is changing every 30 seconds?
Yeah.
Like, what do you want and Max and Yuki and Ricardo to realistically say about the situation?
There's nothing they can say.
Yeah. Legally, they're limited to what they can say. For the reputation of the team, they're limited to what they can say. And also, Horner is in charge of their careers, so they're limited to what they can say. Marco seems to have quite an impact on their careers, so they're limited to what they can say. And then there's Jos Verstappen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say calling it noise and distraction never reads well. I understand why, because it does, it becomes this whole thing that you're like, you're here to race, you want to race, you don't want to be asked questions. I get why you say it. And I think Daniel Ricciardo has been someone that has notoriously not always handled super serious situations the best. Phrasing. So I can understand and I can hear what he said and go, totally understand why. I also think someone needs to help him learn better phrasing because, yes, what are they supposed to say? I don't know. Probably not that one.
You say no comment. Probably not that say one. This is an internal issue and I won't be commenting on it. These people are media trained, by the way.
Yeah.
They have
media
managers who provide them with lines. They have legal who provide them with lines. And you're telling me in that moment, none of the minds in Red Bull can teach these guys how to say, we're not answering this question. It's an internal issue that will be resolved.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the racing. It's race week. Let's talk about the racing. Yeah. Like, Bill Belichick for the Patriots on to Cincinnati. Like, we're talking about the race.
Yeah.
Reject the premise of the question, lads. Yeah. Just reject it every single time.
Yep.
And when other drivers have been asked about the Horner issue, and saying, it doesn't really impact me. I understand why people got frustrated at that.
Yeah.
Just reject the premise of the question. Just don't answer it. Just say, no. Out of respect for all parties involved, I will not be answering these questions.
Yeah.
You may think what you're saying is easily understood, sounds fine. I promise you it's not going to be taken well.
No.
Especially if you are, like, a guy and you're answering a question involving, like, possible sexual harassment or workplace harassment or something like that. The phrasing you think is going to be polite and acceptable just may not be. So just, no comment.
Better to steer clear of it than potentially put yourself in a...
Yeah. Until you know more, at least. Yeah. Until you know and can make an informed statement.
So, to all the drivers, reject the premise of the question. Pivot to your regular
pivot.
Pivot. Ross Geller.
Pivot.
Like, honestly, it was cringeworthy every time I saw them actually go to answer. I'm like, don't do it. Don't. Don't answer this question. Like, it's a trap. Don't do it.
Yeah.
You will not win.
Yeah.
No matter what answer you give, someone is going to be offended. And I'm not saying the risk of offending people is a reason not to answer serious questions. I'm saying you don't know enough. And if you don't have an actual opinion, which clearly some of these drivers don't, which is shocking to me, but they don't, for the reputation of the team and your driver reputation in regards to sponsors and fans, I'm focused on the race. I'm not discussing this, like, out of respect for everyone involved. I am not discussing this.
Simple response.
And if people have a
problem
with that...
Should be easy to memorize.
I don't really know how people can have a problem with that. Like, oh, he should be answering the question. Well, you could debate that all the live long day.
Yeah.
But, yeah. There was just a lot. Like, I'm so sick of all of it.
And I just don't know what's happening anymore. At this point, it's like, I do want to know, like, what is happening.
I think Karen Chantok was saying, like, all people are asking for is transparency, and had transparency been provided from the beginning, all of this would have been avoided. And I think he is absolutely right.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Protect the identity of the person making an allegation 100%. Clearly that didn't happen.
And I get you can't say it during an investigation. Like, I'm not asking for transparency during an investigation.
But once the investigation is done, full transparency.
Yeah.
Like, protect the person, but provide full transparency, because you can simultaneously do both.
Yeah. Especially now. No one knows what's happened. No one. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a week later.
And it's.
The rumor mill is still not fun rumors.
Nope.
It's a mess.
And then the FIA have rumors, which.
Oh, yeah.
It's not on my bingo card. I wish it had been, but yeah. So we also had the FIA confirming that certain members of the FIA, using whistleblower, reported to the FIA compliance department that president of the FIA, Mohammed Ben Sulayem, has allegedly interfered in the championship officiating relating to the stop-go penalty that was incorrectly served by Alonso in 2023, and they overturned the penalty. And also alleging that he instructed staff to find any reason not to certify the Las Vegas track. So, FIA have said there have been reports to the compliance department and there'll be an investigation. And let's just hope for some transparency on that. But I am not going to hold my breath.
It would be nice to have. Not expecting it, sadly.
Not after recent events.
And can I just... This is the one thing about the allegation that's kind of bugged me, right? He supposedly instructed people to find any reason not to certify the track and didn't find the drain cover problem. You had them looking so hard for any reason not to certify it, and they couldn't find one thing that could have actually prevented its certification.
That's why that part almost doesn't even feel true, because how do you miss that?
How
do you have people
Like, I can understand if you've said to people, I want you to find any reason to certify it, I understand how you might miss something. Okay? I get that. Yeah. But when you're telling people to actively be on the lookout for any little reason not to certify something, how was this drain cover not... How did his... How?
Yeah. So how? Yeah, how? How so, is all... Yeah.
Yeah, can we have some transparency on this one, please? Because like, I just can't.
Yep.
And if you need to fix what tests you do on the track to certify them, could you do it before the next race? Because last week you had a drain cover issue. This week in the pit lane there was potentially a drain cover issue.
If there's one in Australia,
if we have
I'm
one the week
losing
after,
my
yeah,
mind.
If drain cover is mentioned, I will change all of my profile pictures to be a drain cover. Like, I just
that's
can't.
Not, yeah, that's fair play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, that just, sounds fair.
Like, no longer anything right.
New
F1,
profile
just
pic.
Drain cover.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. The bane of our existence.
Honestly, I do think this triggers Fred Vasseur every time he hears those two words.
I think it does.
He's just like,
yeah. Yep.
No.
That's what, he has nightmares about it. That's
he goes he home goes and is like, can you clear the drain?
Drain
no.
Covers. Just drains.
Yeah.
Drain covers. Mm. Yep.
God.
Well.
Yeah.
So.
A lot.
Yeah.
On to not so fun rumors for this week. Hopefully next week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Have a funnier one. T Swift, please just show up and be spotted with Alonso.
Yeah. Really, just provide
just one like one picture of you even like 10 feet away from each other, and that'll be
something.
That'll be more
anything.
Than
or like Travis Save Kelce, us. Just tweet about Formula One.
Please.
That
anything. Something.
Like, yes. Ryan Reynolds, for the love of everything, get on your Twitter and your Instagram and just say something funny. Like, we know you have it in you. It's all you ever do. So just give us something Formula One related, please.
Please.
Yep.
Or his wife, take the piss out of him having ownership in Alpine. This is your moment.
Yep.
Blake.
We know you've got it in you.
If you watch this, please.
Please say that.
Please. Yep.
Queen Blake, it is time to step up. Wait.
Please.
Yeah.
Well,
on to our last topic.
Yes.
Fun topic. We are doing our F1 fantasy check-in.
Yes.
Which our social media connoisseur, Caitlin, will be joining us for.
Hopefully.
Oh, there she is. You can
Hello.
See her.
I've been sat here while you've been recording in this position the whole time, like just waiting for this moment.
Oh, she makes her first appearance on the podcast.
Hola, bonjour.
Yay. Yay. Well, who would like to go first?
I think we let Caitlin go first. Because she doesn't want to.
I will go first if no one else wants
to. Yes, please do.
Okay, because my teams, my hopes and dream teams, my realistic team, and my chaotic team kind of actually fell where they should have fallen. Although
Bear in
they're
mind,
still not doing well.
All the points are provisional.
Yes. Yes. Because... Oh, wait, is this total... No, this is not... this is provisional points, yes. My green for go, my chaotic one, scored a whopping total of 25 points. So, thank you to them for being very chaotic this week. Thank you. Thank
did you
so
make
much.
Any changes to the team, or did you keep it as last week?
No, because again, I was
without
not
data.
Here and not, yeah, my data wasn't working. It was not so great. So, it is still all green. And, oh, if we look at it, we can imagine... Lance Stroll got me a whopping minus 19. Thank
nice.
You. Valtteri, minus 1. Yep. Joe on minus 3. And so that 25 came from Russell and Hamilton and Mercedes.
Nice.
So that went well.
Solid.
Vroom Vroom Boys, which is still not my realistic one and is still the one that's being entered to win me money. So that's great. Is the one with 96. And my team with Max Verstappen has 153. And that,
nice.
Yeah.
That but you didn't make any changes
very
to any
nice.
Of your teams?
Nope. Same teams.
Not bad. For not making any changes.
Solid. Yeah.
Good.
So
yes.
That might have honestly worked in my benefit. I feel like had I made changes, it might have gone worse.
The chaos,
the green team is staying unless I can make it worse.
Oh, that's always possible.
To be fair, my problem was I was really indecisive during the week and I kept changing my mind. So I actually got penalty points for changing my mind too often.
I got some too. Yeah.
Yeah. So my chaos is currently sitting at minus 110 points. So I am slaying the chaos team. To be fair,
you've done this.
I haven't done that many.
50 points were deducted for being so goddamn indecisive about who would cause the most chaos that I was penalized. But Pierre Gasly got me negative 40 points because I double DRS'd on him, didn't I? Yes, I did. Thank you, Pierre. I appreciate your help and your service. Alpine got me minus 17 points. Sauber got me minus 5. Zhou Guan Yu got me minus 3. Logan Sargeant, you got me positive points. Positive 4. I was like,
shame on you.
I was on a trend. Right. You and Ocon both got me positive points, which I don't appreciate. But Yuki Tsunoda, you got me negative 3, and I appreciate you. I appreciate you in this moment. So provisionally, I'm on negative 110 points for my chaos. My hopes and dreams is provisionally 149 points. I swapped out Carlos. I swapped out someone for Ollie Bearman. Piastri. Which may not have been the best move. But Ollie got me 20 points. So, and I had to support him. Like, it had to be done. Charles Leclerc got me 99. Ferrari got me 48. Aston Martin only got me 7. So thanks for that, Stroll. Couldn't have kept on the fucking road. Hülkenberg got me 6. And Kevin Magnussen, with your 2 10-second penalties, let me down, only getting me 1. So I'll be removing you next week. And then my realistic team is on 204 points this week so far. Max Verstappen getting me 105 points because I put the triple DRS on him and I put the double DRS on Fernando Alonso, who got me 32. Hülkenberg getting into the points put me on 6 for him. Alex Albon got me 1 point and Red Bull got me 85. But I kept Bottas for negative 1.
Nice. This is where I realized I should have done the 3x if I had it, that I did not do that.
I didn't know either. That was a thing.
No, it is. I didn't look out for it. Yep.
Well, but I've used it.
I
now
get
I can't
distracted
use it again
by anything.
So
oh, you can only use it once.
Yeah,
I want to savor it.
I'll do that soon.
Who's next?
I'll go next.
Go for it.
So I want to start off. Last week, I know we discussed, I wasn't here last week, but I don't think it was mentioned that mine and Chessie's fantasy picks, so we were on Discord together and I was picking them and I was going, oh, this is my first one. She was like, wait, who was in your first one? So I read out and she went, interesting, who's in your second one? Read out, she went, okay, who's in your third? Ours are basically exactly the same bar 3 drivers.
Yeah.
And we didn't even look at each other. It was weird.
But this is like a running thing with Caitlin and I where we're semi-convinced we are in fact related. Because it's just constant.
We're doing the DNA test.
We are. We will do a DNA test because it's just getting weird. Emily?
Okay. So I made several changes. Well, I didn't make as many as Jesse did. I had minus 10 on my chaotic. Nice. Not
minus 110.
50? Minus 110. Okay, I didn't have that.
I mean, minus 50 for the changes I made.
Okay. So on that one, I have Valtteri Bottas. So he got me minus 1. I have George Russell. Got me 26 points. Not what I'm looking for on the chaotic, but
do better, George. Put it in the wall. We know you can do it.
At least once, please. Okay. Safely. But enough to where you're out. Okay. Gasly got me minus 20. Good job. Logan Sargeant got me plus 4. I'm not mad about it.
No.
Not mad. That was good. Then Tsunoda got me minus 3. And then I switched and had Alpine and Williams. No, that didn't make sense. I had I previously had Williams and Red Bull, and then I switched, and now I have Alpine and Kick Sauber. So I got minus 17 and minus 5.
You put Red Bull in your chaos team?
I didn't know we were going for the lowest point.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, like, that's really,
it's
like,
coming back. It's coming
mine
back.
Mine is green.
So total, I have minus 26 for the chaos. My hopes and dreams. If I had known about the 3 times, I probably would have used it. I did not. But I made 2 switches on this one. Need to make sure. Yes, I made 2 switches. I took out, or I have Lando Norris. He got me 14 points. Why did it close? I had Charles Leclerc. He got me 33. Alex Albon got me 1 point. Then I switched in Logan Sargeant, and he got me 4. And then I had to have Mr. Oliver Bearman. Got me some 20 points. Thank you, bud. McLaren and then Williams. So I got 36 points and then 6. 114. Not terrible.
It's going to go up, though.
Yep. Hopefully. Maximum Power Racing. No changes at all occurred in this team. I wonder why. Max got me 70 points. Fernando got me 16. Nico Hülkenberg got me 6. Botas.
I thought you were saying Botas.
I couldn't. I like Botas. I was trying to say it with the accent and it just wasn't happening. So he got me minus 1. I still maybe change that. Joe, minus 3. I don't think I can afford to make a change as a thing, so they might just be staying. That's all right. So then Red Bull,
you should have 85 points. Available.
Well, like, so it doesn't matter the cost or anything then?
Well, I mean, the cost, the budget cap matters, but there are other.
Yeah, she's saying that's what I'm saying. She said she can't afford to make any.
Yeah. I have 0.6 million left. If I get rid of Bottas and Joe, there's. I don't think I can put anybody in. But that one came out to 179 points.
That's pretty.
So cool. Not terrible.
Not terrible.
Can I add? The reason why, this is in true me form as well. This is in true me form. I read you my Bahrain. It's actually in true me form as well. That is something that only I would do. I clicked on it and I looked at the top and I went,
that's all right. So, what's your Saudi Arabia one?
No incidents, got me 70. So, Max, no, he didn't. It got me 170. I'm just going to say 170, Max Verstappen 70, Albon 1, Alonso 16, Bottas minus 1, Sargeant 4, Red Bull 85, Kix Alba minus 5. Oh, I can't go back. For the love of Fred, I got 142, Leclerc 66, Piastri 19, Albon 1, Hamilton 4, Sargeant 4, 48 Ferrari and 0 for RB. And then, oh no, not a gas leak, got me 81, Bearman, who are subbed for Carlos, 20. Stroll, minus 19. Tsunoda, minus 3. Perez, 54. Russell, 13. Haas, 10. And Williams, 6.
Nice.
There we go.
All right, so that's the end of this episode. Hope you enjoyed this very chaotic episode. It was a nice action-packed race weekend as well. Couple surprises, couple interesting things occurred. Yeah. Please make sure to like, subscribe, comment. Follow us on our socials at F1 Grand Prix Girls, and we shall see you for the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.